All right, so I'm going to talk about right or wise action. And the three areas that I'm going to focus on are wise action and the precepts, which have already been discussed, but I'm just going to talk about it a little more. And wise action and the paramis. And the third is going to be wise action and habits and patterns of behavior. So, right action, this is the third Sunday that we have focused on it. And if you have been attending our Sunday sits this month, you may have been thinking about your own wise or unwise actions recently. The practice of wise action is part of the Eightfold Path offered by the Buddha in his first teaching after his enlightenment. How we show up in the world through our relationships and action is as important as the spiritual insights we experience on the cushion. In the Upajjhatana Sutta, the Buddha encourages everyone to contemplate what are called the five recollections on a daily basis. The last of the five recollections is this: my actions are my only true belongings. I cannot avoid the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground on which I stand. So this implies some urgency. We need to be responsible for our actions and make an effort to act with care and good intentions to the best of our ability. We try to reflect before, during, and after we act. But as Philip Moffat points out in his book, Dancing with Life, wise action is a process. We can't always know what the wisest action is, so we learn from the results of our actions, and that helps us revise our actions the next time. The Buddha emphasizes learning and transformation, not guilt and punishment. And Narayana Leibenson, one of the teachers who visits Sims every year, as she's the guiding teacher at Cambridge, Massachusetts Insight, she said, "This moment is the ground on which we stand. The present moment is the moment that matters." So we're going to make mistakes, and we want to come back to the present. That's where our actions, our wise actions, really are grounded. We don't want to cause harm, but if we do, we want to be aware of that so that we can do something about it. We can't change the past, but we can make wise choices now. Contemplating the benefits of wise action and the drawbacks of unwise action can help inspire us to be more careful with our actions. Bhikkhu Bodhi says that the sila, this Pali word for virtue, comes from the root meaning harmony. So sila helps us psychologically because it leads to a feeling of blamelessness and a feeling that we are in harmony with the laws of karma. Practically, it leads to harmonious social relationships, just as unwise actions lead to disharmony. So those are those benefits of harmony and disharmony help motivate us to act as wisely as we can. Practicing with the five precepts is a good foundation for guiding us to wise actions, as Susan Lindell both noted in their Dharma talks earlier this month. So that would be refraining from killing living creatures, refraining from taking that which is not given, refraining from using sexual energies unwisely or uncaringly, refraining from harmful speech, and refraining from taking intoxicating drink or drugs that lead to carelessness. The Buddha suggested we start here. With the precepts, we see the need for restraint in order not to cause harm. But Lindell pointed out when she shared the Mangala Sutta, which lists the highest blessings, that wise action is not just about restraining one's harmful conduct. It's about cultivating and encouraging beneficial behavior too. And some of those highest blessings, positive actions that were mentioned in the Mangala Sutta were not to associate with the foolish, but to associate with the wise, to support mother and father, to cherish wife and children, to be respectful, humble, contented, and grateful. So there are things we can always work to cultivate. Sometimes the precepts are written in terms of both restraint and cultivation. For example, one of the lists of precepts I have says, refrain from killing and practice compassionate action. Refrain from taking that which is not given and practice generosity. Refrain from using sexual energies unwisely and practice responsibility in all relationships. Refrain from harmful speech and practice kind speech. Refrain from misuse of alcohol and drugs and practice caring for body and mind. So this wise action has to do with both restraint and renunciation and with cultivation. The suggestion that we cultivate the antidotes to the conduct we should refrain from led me to think about the paramis that we studied last year. So the paramis are the 10 perfections. The Buddha perfected these 10 perfections, these qualities, over many lifetimes. Studying these last year inspired me to try out behaviors that might not have been my first go-to, but they often led to an increased state of well-being for me and also for people around me. As I remember, these paramis were an inspiration to a lot of us. When we acted in harmony with one of the paramis, it benefited our well-being and the well-being of others. Many of us have the book Parami by Ajahn Suchito, so that is a good resource for recalling the paramis, and I'll just list them right now. Generosity is the first one, morality or sila, renunciation, discernment or wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, resolve, kindness, and equanimity. I remember in our whole group discussion of wise action last week, one person shared the idea that was offered to her at a retreat, and I think the phrasing was, "What would love do?" So it made me think of asking that kind of question using the paramis. For example, what would patience do in this situation? What would truthfulness do? What would generosity do? Life is complicated and things happen fast. And while we try to be clear about what is needed and appropriate using wise view and wise intentions as guides, we don't always know. We act with the wisdom available to us in the moment. Calling up a parami to mind might help. Here's an example from my own practice with wise action this month. I've been working with a tendency to be critical and perfectionistic. It's been a lifelong challenge for me. When Suze introduced wise action 2 Sundays ago, she said that a practice to try out is to look at your action patterns or habits. For example, she asked, "Are you fearful, perfectionistic, impulsive?" She said, "Try a different one." Not so easy, was my quiet response. I was looking over my notes on Suze's talk as I was preparing for this talk, and the note about the action patterns, after the note about the action patterns that Suze spoke about, I had written down, "I see you, Mara." And next to that, I had written down, "Don't know mind." These were ideas that Suze said we could practice with. The ideas sat there isolated but percolating on my page of notes. Habit patterns, "I see you, Mara," don't know mind. Later, I sit down in front of my computer to compose my talk. I ask myself, okay, right action, wise action, what do I want to say? I had been sick for several days, so I was getting a late start. And I like to have plenty of time to prepare. I could feel a twinge of anxiety. What do I know? What have I been practicing with wise action? I'm not sure. I don't know anything. Another twinge of familiar anxiety. I'm not sure I have enough time to figure this out. But wait, I said to myself, I see you, Mara. And as soon as I said, I see you, Mara, I felt some relief. So I'm going to backtrack a bit. Many of you are familiar with Mara, but for those to whom Mara is a new character, I'll explain that in the suttas, Mara acts as the embodiment of delusion, the tempter, the evil one trying to lead the Buddha astray. So what was happening to me was that I was falling into one of my action habit patterns. I was starting to panic because negative thoughts were starting to form, telling me that I didn't have enough time. I didn't have any good ideas for my talk, etc. When the words, I see you, Mara, popped into my head, that broke the spell of identification with the negative thoughts and the accompanying emotional panic state. I could see the truth that is described in the Rohitasa Sutta. And this is a quote from the Rohitasa Sutta. It is just within this fathom-long body, with its perception and intellect, that I declare that there is the world, sometimes it's said the cosmos, that there is the world, the origination of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path of practice leading to the cessation of the world. We really do need to see our thinking, how it arises and passes away, and how it can create a world of delusion. And we need to not be our thinking. We need to see it. So I cleared my head and started to type. But I will add that I had to say, I see you, Mara, more than once. Which brings me to the other note from Susa's talk, don't know mind. I realized that when I worked on letting go of the habitual thinking that was causing me to panic, it was helpful not to conjure up new, more positive thoughts and expectations, but just to say, I don't know. We don't know the outcome of our actions, and we can't control the outcome as much as we might want to. Thinking we know is just one more opportunity for clinging. Narayan Liebenson, who I spoke of before, has a chapter on Don't Know Mind in her book, The Magnanimous Heart. She explains that it's a practice from Korean Zen Buddhism that reminds us that we can't know what will happen in any moment beyond this one. So we can be open to unexpected experiences instead of living in our thoughts, assumptions, and descriptions. Describing our lives to ourselves, she says, and constantly commenting is very different from actually living life or letting life live itself. And I saw that my thoughts were telling me, this is going to be stressful and difficult. You never relax. You are always stressed about these talks. Things aren't going to change. Because I was dealing with a pattern. It had happened before, which made it easy to believe that it would happen again. That sowed the seed of doubt and took away my confidence that things could change. Don't know mind practice can break repetitive cycles that interrupt our attachment to the default of the familiar. I think exploring habits is a gold mine or a landmine for wise action practice, because habits are the place where we act without reflection or caution. We're automatic and maybe overconfident. This is a place for scrutiny and lots of growth. Habits are hard to refrain from. We can cultivate the parami of renunciation with our habits. And remember that classically, right intention begins with the practice of renunciation. So back to the paramis and cultivating the wholesome and beneficial, which that idea I got from Lyndall's talk on, and that sutta, the Mangala Sutta. On the topic of the layperson's skillfulness in right action, the Buddha said, "Conscientious, full of sympathy, one is desirous of the welfare of all sentient beings." This includes being conscientious about our own welfare and having sympathy for ourselves as well as for others. When I was thinking about my practice with unwise perfectionistic views and intentions, I started to look at the paramis. What would be helpful? I have 10 parami flashcards that Ajahn Sucitto made to accompany his book on the paramis, and I looked through them. Each card has a little summary of the parami. The parami for kindness caught my attention. On that card, Ajahn Sucitto summarized, "Recognizing the happiness of a warm heart, I aspire to cultivate empathy and compassion, resisting mind states based on fault finding of myself and others. I will encourage goodwill rather than foster ideals of perfection." I decided that I would practice with that focus on myself, which would help me better extend goodwill and kindness to others. I thought recognizing the happiness of a warm heart is worth exploring when I start feeling critical and anxious. The intention to feel empathy and compassion for the vulnerable, insecure parts of myself is important. Can I hold that intention? Can I abandon fault finding? I thought that means that I will really have to watch my thoughts closely because some of those thoughts are so automatic and subtle, they go right under the radar. I will encourage goodwill rather than foster ideals of perfection. I think that practice is asking me to investigate what goodwill and perfection, each of them, feel like in my body. I think that is going to be a mindfulness practice. So this is where I am right now with my wise action practice. And I want to thank my Sangha friends who helped me stitch together this talk and these ideas for action. Right now I'm asking myself, what would kindness do? So that brings me to the end of my talk, and that means this is time for people who would like to share and discuss the ideas of wise action. I think we're going to do a whole the whole group rather than breakouts because we did breakouts last time. Before we start discussing, I'd like to remind us of our discussion guidelines that our purpose is to listen and learn from others, not to judge. When we share, to share from our own direct experience, to refrain from giving advice, to remember that what is shared here is confidential, and to be mindful of time when you share so everyone has a chance. The prompts that I was thinking of were wise action, just your wise action practice. Have you been, maybe some of you have been practicing with one of the precepts, because those we talk about a lot. Maybe some of you have been trying to restrain and refrain from certain actions, but others might have been cultivating antidotes to the ones that we want to, the unwise ones. Maybe some of you have some habits that came to mind when I was talking about my habits, patterns that you'd like to share. So really, it's open to anything related to wise action, but those are just some ideas. So you can just let's see. Just want to make this bigger so I can see everybody. You can just raise your hand or go like that if you'd like to share. Suze, thanks for beginning.
We don't usually do sadhus in Sunday sit, but I'd like to offer a few sadhus because just this, how personal and honest you were about practicing with the guy, the different ideas. And I appreciated that you quoted some of my stuff, but you took my comments and really made them real, with what did it mean in terms of your pattern and stuff. I feel like I fed you and you fed me back, So sadhu to you, Lauren. Thank you.
Judith, go ahead.
Well, I would echo everything that Suze just said, and I think for me, what really sticks with me is the don't know mind. I have to like pretty much constantly remind myself that just because something is the way it is right now, it's not necessarily going to be that way in the future, that everything changes, and that I have no idea what's going to happen because I have this pattern, and it sounds like similar to you, of always wanting to be prepared and somehow control the future, which is impossible. It's impossible. And so thinking of don't know mind as an actual advantage, a blessing, rather than this state of panic about because I don't know what's going to happen. It's really useful. It's really useful for me, and it's just kind of a different way of thinking about the fact that the future's unknown. And yeah, and I can see myself conditioning myself to respond, to react in a certain way just because something has happened that way. And it doesn't have to happen very many times before I'm conditioned. It's kind of amazing. But thinking don't know mind, that helps me drop the conditioning. Yeah. So thanks.
Thank you, Judith. Elizabeth, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this talk. And I wanted to thank you for the things that really resonated with me. And it was again the mention of Philip Moffat talking about wise action is a process. And then when you said gold mine, landmine, I immediately felt safe because what I felt was the encompassing of the light and the dark that comes with the full reaction to both our kleshas and our wealth. And I felt very seen and whole just in that little expression of yours. And when you talked about both renunciation and cultivation, again, I felt the wholeness of the Buddhist path, both the wise truth and the not knowing together in one. And again, that felt like I could feel my body relax and I can feel a softening in my heart. And I felt a little bit of like, I can be safe here. And I really appreciated that. And your transparency around what I think for a lot of us is the desire to be able to take of the very best ideas of the Buddha to present them and live in them can sometimes lead to wanting to perfect our ability to talk about them. And the fact that you're transparent with that meant very much to me, and I very much appreciated it. Thank you very much. That's all.
Thank you, Elizabeth. We have a lot of time if anybody else wants to talk. Deanna.
When you were talking today, I was thinking about what Candace talked about back in July for the right speech. She referred to the insight dialogue, and I had read that book in the past, but today I was thinking, well, wait a minute, right action could kind of be used with that process as well. Because I tend to react to something instead of pausing to think about it. So I thought, well, maybe I could try this process for right action and try to pause, relax, open, trust emergence. And I don't know if I'd be listening deeply, but you know, you could think about your action before you act. And so that's, I guess, what I've been thinking about today, because I tend to react to things, and sometimes I just want to, you know, reflect on that, and I'm like, oh, I should pause before I just react out of upset or anger.
Yeah, and that's patience too. It's one of the paramis.
Yeah,
I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And listening, I was thinking, listening in a way is like observing, like really seeing what your actions are doing, listening to your body and your heart as you act. So in a way, listening does, I think, operate in those stages. And we are going to have that insight dialogue retreat in September. So thank you for sharing that, Deanna. Yeah, I like the use of the insight dialogue. Yeah, the steps. Are you guys familiar? I don't know if some of you may not have been here when we talked about it, but the steps for insight dialogue are pause, relax, open, trust emergence, listen deeply, speak the truth. Candace, go ahead.
I was, that was fun hearing that, because yesterday I was listening to Tuareg's talk from last month on wise speech, and she was talking about inner speech and how it all begins inside. And I thought, this is so applicable to action. And she was talking about the energy that arises in our practice and how we can sometimes, our mind uses that energy to start worrying or getting angry or blah, 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 blah. And how she practiced giving metta to ants.
Yes.
Changing that energy. And it was so beautiful. And I've been thinking about how in wise action, how we have this energy, and I love that Deanna just brought up the insight steps, because it really does take pausing and saying, ooh, where do I want to use this energy? How do I want to expend this energy? How do I want my energy to affect the world? What kind of wake do I want to leave? And so I really feel that they go hand in hand really, really well. And I've been, you know, I'm not doing metta to ants, but I am just, you know, whenever I feel myself starting to react to something, I just metta, 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 metta. I love, you know, Philip Moffat will always just metta, 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 just like it's this patting yourself, and I just love that, because it immediately breaks that negative that was beginning to buzz around in my head. So I loved your talk. It was so honest and so familiar. Thank you.
Candace, thanks for sharing that, Philip, meta, 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 meta. I remember him doing that, but I'd forgotten about that. And I think some of the body language You know, we need to transcend the different sense, mix it up a little bit. Thank you. Nina, go ahead.
Oh, Lauren, thank you so much for your talk. I really liked it. And Candace, I'm glad you brought up that our actions are energy and affect everything else. As for my own practice, I've been finding this right action a really, how can I say, difficult or an intense study. And for me, it's because of so many people in the world have, many humans have decided that wrong action is the way today. And living in a world like that, it's like right action is as Nana, our friend talked on Thursday, and I wish everybody would listen to his talk on right action, and talked about right action as being really revolutionary, subversive in this time. And so that's meant a lot, and that's a lot and very complex for me to feel about what right action will be in our life when the norm is to be wicked and greedy and delusional, you know. And so, you know, taking a look at our own, what I consider our own hindrances or horribleness or the things that we do is actually right action. Our own meditation, the fact that we meditate, the fact that we are meeting now, that's right action for me. And I was listening to a talk the other day by Eugene Cash, and he was quoting Thich Nhat Hanh, who said, right action includes the kinds of action that helps human beings and other living beings who are being destroyed by war or political oppression or social injustice or hunger, even a hunger for knowledge, to protect the living and serve human beings and cultivate our loving kindness to do that. So the fact that we are meditators and are exploring the Dharma in ourselves and in each other is right action. Thanks.
Thank you, Nina. I hear you on what you're saying about the subversive, what right action in this time. And I did find there are precepts that Thich Nhat Hanh has written, which are quite amazing, and really go into action of justice. In fact, I've been reading a lot of Thich Nhat Hanh recently because it helps me with the world situation, because he managed to stay with right action, you know, as his country was being totally destroyed, and he didn't, you know, so he's it seems it's needed. It's needed something beyond the usual five precepts is needed these days. So I really agree with you on that. And thank you for bringing that up. Marcos, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to say I appreciate your mentioning at the very beginning the a sort of guiding concept or phrase, I see you, Mara, yeah. Because I think that's something, I hadn't thought of that, or hadn't thought of it maybe in a while, but I think it's very useful. And because I think sometimes, you know, in addition to right action, there's sort of an inverse, which is inaction, that can come up when we are in a situation where we know that, where we're called to do something, even to do something very simple, say to help someone in need. And to practice, you know, if we have the paramis as a guide for our actions or the way that we live, and then we find ourselves in a situation where we have the, like even a very simple opportunity to practice, generosity, and, but where it might be easier for us to not do so. You know, I feel like it's one of those, I see you, Mara,
mm-hmm.
type of situations where, you know, someone is struggling with something, a neighbor, a person I don't know, and I could lend a hand and it will take 5 minutes out of my day, or I could just walk by. And, you know, it's an opportunity for me to live by my values and practice kindness and generosity. Or I could just keep going. And I know from my experience that if I just keep going and I don't take that opportunity to help my neighbor, to help that stranger, that later on, it's going to come up for me. I am going to reflect on that experience. I'm going to reflect on my inaction. And so I think that's something that comes to mind. And so I appreciate that you call out the I see you, Mara. I think that's a good, sort of guide. Thank you for that.
Thank you for bringing that up, associating it with the not acting as something to pay attention to, as well as acting, you know, because that it's more subtle, you know. And I think with right action, we're called upon to pay attention to things that are subtle and we could look the other way and not notice. So I think you brought that up. I appreciate that. Thank you. Julie?
Hi, Lauren. Thank you for the talk. It was really lovely. And I just want to say how much I appreciate everybody's contribution, because as with everything having to do with the Dhamma, it's just, there's countless levels and layers that we can explore. The one that I wanted to draw out also is, you know, this word action. I mean, we think of it as the things we do. You know, most of the time, the way we interact with other people or don't interact with other people. And, you know, I just wanted to point out too that action is also holding an understanding that our, the way that we feed our minds with our thoughts and our reflections, create the conditions for future things too. And this whole meta and, you know, just being aware of how much beautiful energy that we can bring to our state of mind, as a sort of a storehouse. I don't know. That's what came up for me. Because that is an action. It's an action we don't think of very often. But a really, really powerful action. You know, when we're contemplating and we're on our own and not interacting with someone, and just I don't feel like I can't let a Sunday go by without saying kindness for self, you know, too, because it's so easy, speaking of the habitual, to think of all the things that we're not doing or think about all the ways that we're falling short, as opposed to cultivating this constant remembering of, you know, this path that we're on and all the things that we're doing right. And, you know, just the beauty of being here and seeing that we're all human beings who are trying and doing the best we can. And in the end, nobody can know what's most helpful for us except ourselves. So don't forget to nurture that too. That's my message. Thank you.
Julie, thank you for those words. Well, we might be able to go early recess, guys. Seems like our discussion has been very rich, and we can come to the next, kind of bring it to a close. Thank you for everybody for sharing. It's really nice to see all, it's kind of like a kaleidoscope, a lot of different reference perspectives. Suze, yes.
Jean isn't here, so, and I don't have a little post-it that has a heart around Sangha, but that's what I'm bringing up is just, you know, and it's the sutta you and Lyndall mentioned about the highest blessings and not to associate with the foolish ones. We're associating here with wise ones, and so however you do the heart thing. Yeah.
A lot of appreciation for all the wisdom, very much so. Okay, so I want to remind you that you can offer Donna to support SIMS, which is an all-voluntary organization, and support our guiding teachers. And let's see. So in closing, I think we can offer, I wanted to offer metta to us. I just need to find this. Okay, so just take a moment to let go of things. May we be happy accepting things as they are. May we be peaceful and free from inner and outer harm. May we be in harmony with the current condition of our body, mind, and heart. And may we live with joy and ease of well-being, and may the benefit our practice today ripple out and touch many, many beings. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Really nice being here with you.